I call Senate Resources to order. Today is May 12, 2023. The time is 3:34 p.m. and welcome to Senate Resources. Please be sure to silence your cell phones. Committee members present, Co-Chair Bishop, Vice Chair Willikowski. Senator Klayman will be late. Senator Dunbar is here, Senator Kaufman, Senator Kawasaki, and I'm Senator Giesel. Thank you, Carrie Cooper-Ryder, and we'll miss you. And thank you, Amanda, for being here. All right, so on today's agenda, SJR 12, Section 404, Clean Water Act Permit Program. This is a resolution by Senator Bishop, and HB 104, Expedited Timber Sales, by Representative Kronk. So, first up, the 404 resolution, and I would invite the bill sponsor, Senator Bishop, to introduce the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. I do apologize a little bit for the lateness of this, and I appreciate the committee's willingness to take it up today. But it's been a work in progress, but we got it before us. Enough of that. Let's just dive into it. SJR 12 supports the state of Alaska's Department of Environmental Conservation in our efforts to assume dredge and fill permitting program under the 404 Clean Water Act. And it urges Congress to appropriate the funds for states that have assumed primacy. And we've spent three meetings on that here. You guys have, and the committee has read the whereases and be it resolves. And I'm not going to waste any more of your time rehashing what we've already been talking about. So if anybody has any pertinent questions, I would like to just put on the record that EPA does still retain veto authority under 404C, and they still maintain dredge and fill permits for waters, federal waters of the United States. And if I've misspoken, we do have two lifelines in the audience that could speak to anything further from the committee's questions that I might not be able to answer.
Thank you, Co-Chair Bishop. Yes, available in the room is Randy Bates, Director of the Division of Water from the Department of Environmental Conservation, Crystal Koneman, who is the Legislative Liaison, and then on the phone here, I have Julie Pack, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law, who is assigned to DEC for any questions. Any questions from the committee? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. I have a question, and I don't know who to ask, but it's relating to the 404. Actually, first question would be on the waters, on Section 10 waters, that's waters of the U.S. I think, Senator Bishop, you said that the state would retain only on state waters, but not under the Section 10 waters under a 404 assumption.
Mr. Bates, would you be willing to come up? Welcome, if you'd put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Co-Chair Bishop, Vice Chair Willikowski, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me up to respond. We do have a lifeline out. It's Julie Pack, and she is very versed in this particular issue. I'd like to turn this over to her. If I could, though, very quickly, we greatly appreciate this resolution. We are very supportive of this resolution. We are looking into the federal funding aspect of primacy programs like 404, and we're working with our congressional delegation. We're working with our federal funding agencies and partners at the Corps of Engineers and EPA, as well as our organization representing organizations that we belong to that also represent other states that may have an interest in these 404 programs like this and the assumption of those. Very quickly to also affirm and clarify just a little bit of what Senator Bishop had said, nothing changes with regard to the 404C authority that EPA expressed. EPA will continue to retain oversight authority over a state-run program for 404, and the Corps of Engineers will still retain authority to permit 404 in those non-assumable Section 10 waters. The state would retain, would take over permitting authority in the rest of those assumable waters. So, and with that, with your permission, turn to Julie Pack for a little clarity and answering of Senator Kawasaki's question.
Thank you, Mr. Bates. Ms. Pack, can you hear us? Did you hear Senator Kawasaki's question?
Chair Giesel, yes, I can hear you. Can you all hear me?
Yes, very clear.
Excellent. Thank you. For the record, my name is Julie Pack, Assistant Attorney General. Director Bates clarified it perfectly. The Corps will get to retain authority, not EPA, over the Section 10 waters, which are the waters that we expect to be the non-assumable waters once we assume the program. Thank you.
Does that answer your question, Senator Kawasaki?
It does. I just had a follow-up on that.
Yes, follow-up.
And then I don't know who can answer this, but in talking to an engineering firm that does water or does work specifically now, one of the concerns that would come up was that they would have to work in two separate agencies now. They'd have to work through EPA directly, and then they would have to work through the state if the state were to assume the 404 primacy in a particular waterway that was impacted both with Section 10 waters and non-Section 10 waters.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, and Madam Chair, my apologies. I just launched without putting myself on the record. Randy Bates, Director of Water, Department of Environmental Conservation. I'll take this, and Julie can fill in as necessary. Currently, if a state is to assume a 404 program, and we have a bright line that says the Corps of Engineers retains Section 10 waters, and we would hope and assume, and we're working towards that bright line being 300 feet inland from the ordinary high water line. The Corps is going to retain Section 10 waters, marine waters, certain waters that are freshwater, and then that sliver of land 300 feet inland from that. The state is going to assume the rest of those lands and waters inland to the extent of the waters of the U.S. definition, WOTUS. In the case of a project that is fully located in the retained waters by the Corps is going to perform that 404 permitting function. In the event a project is fully located in state-assumed waters, the state would perform that function of the 404 permitting. However, in the case of a project that is going to be located on the shore in retained waters, but also have aspects of that project that are going to transition over and be in the state-assumed waters, it's our intention to build an opportunity for the applicant to make a choice. They're either going to go through the Corps strictly for their full permit for the project and its entirety that's in those retained waters as well as assumed waters, or at the applicant's request, they can bifurcate that permitting structure, get a permit from the Corps for that aspect up to the boundary, and then they would get a state permit, a state 404 permit for the remainder of the project that is inland of that retained waters boundary. In that case, the applicant would have to go to two agencies to get a 404 permit, but we would try and make that an applicant-driven option, not an obligation.
Okay. Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki?
I guess under what circumstance would a company choose to forego the state and just go directly through the federal government if they were interfacing two separate water bodies?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, there's a variety of circumstances. It could be a little sliver of project, something that just dips into the state's lands. It could be something that doesn't require a lot of mitigation or compensatory mitigation. So, in that case, it would maybe simpler for an applicant to stick with the Corps of Engineers and just a single permitting process. However, for a project that is substantially located in state-assumed waters or that has some compensatory mitigation requirements that we think we could manage differently and more appropriately than the Corps of Engineers, that applicant may choose to bifurcate that review process and go with the Corps for that dock project, if it will, or the located project, and the state for the rest of that project.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions from committee members? for Mr. Bates or Ms. Pack? All right, seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Bates. I will open up public testimony now on Senate Joint Resolution 12. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on SJR 12? Seeing none, I'm looking online and not seeing anyone online to testify either. With that, I'm going to close public testimony. Brief at ease. Senate Resources is back on the record. We have an amendment. Senator Wilikowski?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On behalf of Senator Klayman, I'd like to offer amendment number one.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
If I could, this is being proposed by Senator Klayman, who's got a House Judiciary hearing at this time, so he knows a lot more about this than I do. But what his proposal is to add a whereas. I guess I'll just read it into the record. Whereas the United States Environmental Protection Agency office that serves the state is located in Seattle, Washington, which is 1,448 miles away from Anchorage, the state's largest city, and add a further resolve that the Alaska State Legislature supports federal funding for the United States Environmental Protection Agency office that serves the state to be located in the state. And perhaps if we could hear from the department on what their position is, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. Mr. Bates, could you come forward and comment on amendment number one?
Madam Chair, for the record, Randy Bates, Director of Water, Department of Environmental Conservation. Thank you for asking the question. The department does not object to this amendment. However, we note that there is already a district office in Anchorage for EPA. It is staffed by Region 10. Region 10 includes Alaska, Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. And they interact with DEC on a regular basis on a variety of different topics from air, water, spill prevention, and others. So this amendment may be redundant. There already is an office located in Anchorage for the state with EPA.
Thank you, Mr. Bates. Question, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To your knowledge, has the EPA office ever been in some past time located in Seattle?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I'm not aware that the Alaska District office has been located outside the state. As long as I know, it's been in Anchorage. We have had EPA staff here in Juneau as well, in the capital. And in both places, they're in the federal buildings. There is a significant Region 10 office of EPA in Seattle, and so there's quite a number of employees that are down there, and we work with those folks on a regular basis.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Co-Chair Bishop.
Yes, I'd just like to make a clarifying point on your comment about EPA in the Capitol. You're meaning in the city of Juneau at the federal building down here, not in the state capitol.
Co-Chair Bishop, through the chair, that's correct. At the federal building is where they're located.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Senator Wilikowski.
Do you know how many employees there are at the EPA office in Anchorage? Is it just one person, or is it a whole staff of people?
Senator, Vice Chair Wilikowski, through the chair, I'm not sure of the exact number. I know it's more than one, less than 50, somewhere in between there. I know of at least an attorney or two, some staff, and some higher level positions as well that are counters with my supervisors.
One last question.
Yes, follow up.
Do you know what percentage of the work is being done out of the Anchorage office as opposed to being done in Seattle?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, I don't know the answer to that, but we can certainly ask EPA to weigh in and respond to that question.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, it's not my amendment, it's Senator Klayman's. I think just for expedient's sake, I'll withdraw the amendment and then I know we're coming to the end of the last few days, but if you could get us a response to the committee, I think that'd be helpful.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Senator Wilkowski, you're withdrawing amendment
yes.
number one? Okay. So amendment number one has been withdrawn. Are there further amendments? All right. Seeing none. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to report.
Oh, pardon me. Pardon me. Senator Kawasaki, I'm sorry I missed it.
Thanks. Are we, if we're going to move the bill, I did have a question
yes,
first.
Yes,
and it's for Randy if he can answer. It's regarding the 402 permitting and the assumption that the primacy that we took over a dozen years ago and the amount of federal money that has come for that. Has it, is it 100% paid for by the federal government? Has it been partially paid for? What's the, how much is this, has the state had to be in as far as general fund goes?
Sure. Senator Kawasaki, through the Madam Chair. Thank you. The 402 program was developed over the course of 4 years and implemented in phases, the 402 program, the wastewater discharge permit program, 2008 through 2012. As it currently stands, we bring in about $2.6 million in federal support for the implementation of that 402 program. We are required to match that at 25%. We do that in an excess of 25% at about $1.5 million general fund, and we bring in about $1.5 million in permit fees. So in total, the 402 program runs off about $5.5 million. That's so we, as I said, use more in general fund to run that program than the feds provide us, so that we're required to provide. On an equivalent type level, we believe that the funding for 404 is relatively it is accurate as we prepared it. It's about $4.9 million in 24 fiscal year 24. $4.7 million going forward in 25 and beyond with 32 staff. Right now, the development of that 404 program would be general funded. What this resolution gets to is the support of federal funding to help offset some of that GF, much like the 402 program would. We also believe that as we build this program and we build in those permit fees, that's going to help offset that general fund requirement, much like it does currently in 402 as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Further questions? All right. Brief at ease. So do we... Back on the record, any further questions for the bill sponsor or the department? Seeing none, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to report SJR 12 work order 33-LS0846/alpha out of committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Seeing no objection, the bill is moved. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the documents.
We're back on the record. Next up is HB 104, expedited timber sales. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 104. The work order is 33LS0474-D-Delta as our working document.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion, and Ms. Ann Richters will come up and speak to the CS. And we do have, oh, let me switch screens here. We do have Department of Natural Resources. We will have Helge Ng, State Forester. Mr. Commissioner John Boyle, he's not a designee anymore. He passed. He's a full commissioner now. And we have Alpheus Bullard, Art Ledge Legal Consultant, online for questions as well. So, Ms. Rickers.
For the record, Ann Rickers, staff to Senator Clegg Bishop. The document I'm looking at here is the explanation of changes for the Senate CS for House Bill 104. That's moving from version U.A to version D. In summary, version D simplifies and speeds up the negotiated timber sale process. It retains the usual DNR public processes to meet constitutional requirements for public notice. It also retains local manufacturing requirement for negotiated sales. And it adds a reporting requirement for the DNR to give a report to the legislature during the next session describing each timber sale in detail.
Thank you. And just for conversation, it's our intention to, once we adopt the CS today, we're going to let the commissioner would like to speak to it. Members are free to ask questions, but that's our intention. We're going to set this bill aside over the interim and hold it in committee. So any questions of committee members before I go to the commissioner and let him speak to the bill? Commissioner Boyle?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, yeah, we can hear you fine. Put yourself on the record, and the floor is yours.
Well, good afternoon, Co-Chair Bishop, Co-Chair Giesel, members of the committee. This is John Boyle, Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, for the record. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this afternoon on HB 104. DNR supports the intent behind this bill. In the relatively short period of time that I've been commissioner, I've had the opportunity to get out and speak to a number of our small local harvesters and other manufacturers of local wood products to get a sense for how well DNR has been performing in the area of getting timber out to sale, and whether or not our existing statutes and regulations and procedures are really apposite to what the industry needs. And I think fundamentally DNR recognizes that we need to really take a hard look at how we're going about managing and interacting with the industry that is utilizing our forests and state forested lands. As most of you are well aware, last year, you know, DNR brought in roughly a little less than $1.5 million in revenue from timber sales across the state. We spent $120 million putting out wildfires. And to me, that's indicative of an imbalance, where when we look at other countries, other jurisdictions around the world that just at similar latitudes, have similar climates, have similar trees, boreal forests with very similar species. And when we see that they have a timber industry that produces board feet of timber a magnitude of order larger than what we're doing here, it suggests that there's a lot more that we can do in this space. And I think a small step is to streamline and simplify some of our processes. Some of it, which is included in this bill, include lengthening the terms of the lease sale, so that if a small operator knows that they can have a contract for a longer period of time That gives them an instrument that they can take to the bank, and they can take out a loan for more, to purchase more equipment, sawmills, you know, things of that nature, so that they can grow their businesses and produce more lumber. Because the one thing that I've seen, and this is particularly true in interior Alaska, there's a tremendous demand for local lumber. From the folks out at Dry Creek that are making cabin kits to folks in Tok that are doing the same and manufacturing local lumber, they really can't keep up with the amount of demand that there is. And so our hope really and our intent with this bill is to take that first step, it making some tweaks around the edges to be responsive to what we've heard folks need. And then really my intent and my desire here over the interim, already tasked my folks in the Division of Forestry and Fire Protection to look at, is a holistic look at our existing framework and to really map out where Alaska exists today in terms of what we need regulations and statutes wise for better monetizing our forests, and then looking ahead to how we want to grow the industry here in the state. And you guys have heard me testify ad nauseum on the carbon bill. I believe that's one piece of it, but I really fundamentally believe that Alaska can grow a timber industry here in the state. And it's going to take something that we've never really done before, which is active forest management. But I think if we're willing to invest the time and some of the resources to building up the expertise and spending the money on things that we need to do, like replanting more aggressively after wildfires, starting to manage areas of the forest to produce higher quality merchantable timber, I really believe that we can start moving the needle and closing that monetary imbalance in terms of how much revenue that we're raising as it relates to timber sales and how much money we're spending on putting out wildfires. And of course, taken to the max, the more that we can manage forests and be proactive in that space, we can reduce costs of wildfire while hopefully raising revenue through timber sales and other means. And I know the demand is there. And another thing that this bill does is it enables us to take a look and to be able to offer timber at less than appraised value in instances where if there are local communities that need the wood for whether it's biomass, whether it's determining that getting more lumber out into the community to lower building costs. You know, these are other things that we can take a look at in order to help promote and grow the industry in a way that can bring more economic value to the state just beyond a simple dollar amount being brought in through a timber revenue. So I guess in summary, we really look at this as kind of a first step at it moving forward in that direction, and I really look forward to working with this committee in particular as we bring forward a more comprehensive package that really touches from A to Z all of the elements of how we go about managing our forests, conducting timber sales, so on and so forth, and gives you guys a vision for how we see DNR moving forward in this area and really growing this industry to be a much more potent economic force than it is currently.
Thank you, Commissioner. Don't go anywhere because Senator Dunbar's got a question and I've got a comment, not so much a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. So you sort of touched on this at the end, but I guess I would express my sort of concern and also ask a question that you keep in mind as you go through this process during the interim, which is on page 2 of the CS, sections 4 and 5. So section 5, you repeal the section related to base price. And then in section 4, you say sale of timber to a local manufacturer of wood products or use of wood fibers at less than the appraised value. And, you know, it occurs to me that I was searching for a word at our last hearing. It's monopsony, which is a lot of times there's only one buyer in these markets. And so there isn't really a functioning market. I don't think you do an RFP process, correct me if I'm wrong, where you sort of ask folks, you know, try to get the best price. And I'm not suggesting you would do this, but perhaps some commissioner in the future could cut a sweetheart deal pretty easily with a manufacturer and fall, and there's no floor here. You could go far below the appraised value. And so I guess I want to hear your thoughts on that, and if there's some way that we can put some sideboards around this or a floor, whatever metaphor you want to use, to sort of protect the state from that kind of behavior.
Yeah, Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I appreciate that question, and I also have Helge Ng on the line that I know could fill in more of the technical details, as he's more of the expert on processes as they exist today. But I guess just from a high-level standpoint, know that I see that as being great risk to the state, because as I stated earlier, we're starting from the standpoint of we only raised less than $1.5 million of revenue a year. So what I think is important is the more that we can increase and encourage and promote these local operators, the folks that are going out that want to invest in saws, that want to invest in kilns, that want to start producing, whether it's cabin kits or beams for home construction, whatever it may be, the more that we can encourage and promote and incent those types of operators, even if the state might be making a little less in some instances on the timber, if we're increasing investment in rural communities that are kind of off the main rail belt, if we're increasing jobs and employment opportunities in those areas, if we're again lowering the cost of building supplies for people that want to build cabins, that want to build homes, things like that, I think that there's other criteria that we can look at that might merit instances where we, you know, sell at a lower amount. But again, ultimately, I think our intent is to balance that with also working to increase the merchantable value of the timber that we do have, so that we can start growing our revenue share through just having higher quality trees to sell and having the quantities that we need in order to attract the more significant investors that could invest in the time and the machinery and the people to really start producing much more commercial amounts of lumber and timber in the state.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Kaufman has a question.
Yes, sir. Thank you, through the chair, to Commissioner Boyle. Not a question. I just wanted to add, I was thinking of, if you think of the total value equation of this, it would also include the fuels risk reduction, fire risk reduction that you're getting from removing fuels that could end up being a big liability if they got lit up in situ.
Is that a question?
No, it was just a comment.
Just a comment.
Regarding calculating the value of the timber, it's worth nothing in place, but it's also a liability should it light up in a wildfire, forest fire.
Right. Well, it's just a commissioner. I've just got a comment. First off, I want to thank the bill sponsor, right? Because if we're only selling $1.5 million worth of timber a year, we got a lot of room to run to grow revenue for the treasury. As someone that, you know, spent part of his childhood in Southeast, from Ketchikan to Wrangell to Petersburg to here, there were sawmills in some communities, two sawmills running, and those towns were vibrant. Ketchikan was the third largest city in the state in the 60s. And you had a great economy with a renewable industry. So I want to thank the bill sponsor for raising the bar and bringing this forward to grow our timber industry. And I think my own words, if we can get sales out faster, if we got room to maneuver on these sales with the department and how they value a sale, whether it's a salvage or a expedited sale, we don't know what opportunities might come from businesses if we can make it easier and faster to get timber sales out there. So I would like, you know, I know we have in the back of the bill, there's a report due to the legislature in this bill, but I can see that that's going to bring some value. The other thing I want to mention on that is we're going to see in real time now with this reporting requirement due when the bill does get finally passed, something that we haven't seen in a long time. And that's all I have for now. Senator Geisel has a comment or a question.
I have a question, actually, and it's for Forestry Director Ng. And this is, I don't know, it may seem like a rabbit trail. Director Ng, my husband and I often harvest bark beetle kill spruce because we burn firewood in the winter. And when we bring that wood in the winter, it's not unusual to find a few spruce bark beetles crawling around on the floor, right? So they do survive. Is there, how would someone that's harvesting this timber not actually spread the infestation as they move these dead trees and then process them? Can you enlighten me? What do they do?
Chair Geisel, for the record, this is Helge Yang, Director of Forestry and Fire Protection and State Forester. The spread of beetles is always a concern, but I think it's important to keep in mind that the beetle is endemic, meaning at natural background levels already. So you have beetles north of the range. It's just that they're not at epidemic levels. So what we want to avoid is to basically start a new epidemic and spread this massive infestation of beetles. And that is best done by maintaining a healthy forest that can resist beetle epidemics, which is not to say we should not be cognizant and careful about hauling firewood too far. So your point is well taken, that firewood is best burnt as close to the source as possible.
Thank you, Director Ng. Thank you, Mr. Shaw.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to recognize Senator Klayman joined us at 4:13. And Senator Dunbar has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is more a comment for those who will be working on drafting this over the summer, and perhaps it's a question if you want to respond to this as well, Commissioner, if you're open to it. But there is this reporting requirement. It's a one-time report, 30th day of the second regular session of 33rd Alaska Legislature. I don't see an ongoing reporting requirement here. I think one thing that would alleviate my concerns about, you know, the aforementioned lack of a floor, it would help to on these sales, is if this report were sort of recurring. That being said, I understand we don't want to keep making reports. You know, it's time consuming for the department. I was wondering if you'd be open, or the draft would be open, to some kind of trigger provision that was like, you know, if revenues fall below the 2023 real dollar amount, then this report will be required that year. You know, we want to see more revenues raised by this. If we start to see that because of this change in the law, sales that otherwise would have happened that are already happening routinely now suddenly are being sold for significantly less, that would be an indication to us that this had not done what we thought it had. So just a thought. I don't know if you'd be open to that, Commissioner, but if revenues go down instead of up, I think I'd like to have a detailed explanation as to why in the future.
Yeah, Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I appreciate that thought. I don't know that we would have any consternation over a provision like that. Certainly, it's not our intent here to be shady or to hide the ball from the legislature when it comes to some of these timber sales. I think we feel quite confident that should we offer some of these sales at a lower rate than we have traditionally, that we would be able to cite our analysis and our rationale for why we believe that that's in the state best interest. So I don't personally have any issue with that, and I would assume that my folks would be able to put that information together for the legislature if that was the will of the body.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we have some. That last section needs just a scotia work, and including with what your comments are, and that's another reason why we're going to hold the bill over the interim. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Just comment on that. You might want to, through the chair, regarding that, add an inflation adjustment measure to it so that you don't keep moving out of the bracket and requiring a report just for inflation. And then I had a question for the commissioner, too, if
please.
I may. Thank you to the commissioner. Maybe you could defer this question. I was just wondering, the kiln drying process, if we're doing dimensional lumber and it's going through kiln drying, do we know if that helps attenuate the beetle infestation? So could the kiln dried lumber being produced by this process be better than transporting firewood?
Yes, Senator Kaufman, to the chair. That's a great question. I think I would prefer to defer to my expert on the line to fill you in on the details of that.
Director Ng, can you answer Senator Kaufman's question, please?
Through the chair, Senator Kaufman, Helgi Ng, for Camp Architect. You don't need to kiln dry necessarily to kill the beetles, so if everything helps, but it's not a requirement. Air drying works as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you. All right. Seeing, I'm going to remove my objection, and I'd like to invite the bill's sponsors, Committee Aid, Mr. Stancliffe, to the table just to have any closing comments before we set this bill aside for till next year.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, Dave Stancliffe, staff to Representative Cronk. We have met with the administration and listened to the concerns by committee members here with regard to public notice and public process. The new CS for Representative Cronk represents a negotiated compromise with the administration. It also addresses the concerns that we've heard here at the committee level. And Representative Cronk wants to stress that his goal is to turn a withering timber industry into a vibrant industry. And the bill is in some ways a concession, but it's based on assurances by the administration that the division will perform more efficiently and expeditiously. And the verification of that assurance is in the conditions of the report to the legislature next session. And we would simply ask if it's your intention, and I understand it is, to keep this bill as a starting point with the administration and with legislators to work toward whatever we need to do to get a more efficient result. That the provision, the letter provision that we would ask the administration to put together that report so you would all have information next session on how well the division performed without changing much of their internal structure. So with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you all, the committee members, and we'll see you next session, I believe.
All right. Thank you. Next, we're going to go to Senate Bill 69, Geothermal Resources. I'd like to bring up some housekeeping issues. I had kept public testimony open. Is there anybody in the room wishing to testify on Senate Bill 69? Seeing none, anybody online? Public testimony is closed on Senate Bill 69. All right. I'd like to thank Amanda Kraft and Carrie for spending this session with us. And hopefully this is, we love seeing you, but for this session, we're kind of hoping this may be the last time we'll see you in this committee room in an official capacity. So this will conclude today's meeting, but you know, we all know Carrie is retiring and leaving us, and I want to just open it up if anyone would like to say anything to Carrie, and it is her birthday. So if anybody any of the members want to speak, please do. Senator Wilkowski,
we helped draft the citation, and just a fascinating life you've lived, and it's been many years you've been here. I think it's 8 million minutes. I've personally probably spent a couple hundred thousand of those minutes with you. I want to thank you for being here and for serving the legislature all these years, and wish all the best in your retirement.
Senator Klayman,
just want to, as I relatively new member of this body, when I heard all those details this morning, all I could think of was, why weren't we having a committee meeting at the lodge?
I'll just say thanks, Carrie. It's good to be off and riding your e-bike here soon. I'll tell you what, you get Saturday off from state affairs. We don't have to meet. And I just wanted to say thank you, because as a new chair, I fumbled my way through. But it was excellent having Carrie there. She actually gave us some materials so that we kind of knew how to go with our script. And it took us a while, but we fumbled through it the first week or two, but then got straight. So thanks a lot, Carrie.
I'll just say thank you and happy birthday and best wishes for the future.
Yes, happy birthday, Carrie, and thank you.
I just got to read this into the record. So this is a few more minutes. It's not the whole thing, because Carrie was, you guys were on the Exxon Valdez for some time. I read that in here, but I love this quote. When a deckhand doubted your ability to toss a rope, and your response was, "I'm not the one who ran aground." So we have never doubted your ability. So thank you. Happy birthday. This will conclude today's meeting. And we could tentatively have another one, but we'll just, if we need to come back here, but we're adjourned. Have a great weekend.